The pork industry is big business. And when it comes to the World Pork Expo, the 30th annual event was full of trade issues impacting the industry. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. On this episode of the MTOM, a conversation with the National Pork Producers Council Board President, Jim Heimerl, a producer from Johnstown, Ohio. We'll get into serious issues of which cuts of pork he prefers or his tips for preparing the meat at home. But first, we talk trade. So if I do come to Johnstown, Ohio, what are the two things you're going to show me first?
Well, I'm going to show you a small town atmosphere outside of the big town of Columbus. So it's about 20 miles northeast of Columbus.
Why, is that where you're from, or did you move into
I was born and raised there. I didn't make it very far. I was on one side of the road, and I moved to the other side of the road, so that's how far I ventured from home.
Is that when Mom and Dad moved to town, you got to go to the other side, or how'd
that
work?
No, my Mom and Dad moved down on another house and about 3 miles away.
So what's your operation like today?
Well, today my operation is we have about four sow farms. We sell about 800,000 pigs a year. I have my family involved. I got two sons and a daughter-in-law and my wife all involved in our farming operation. We have crops, corn, soybeans, and wheat. We have cattle, a trucking division, a couple feed mills, and grandkids.
Are any of the grandkids interested yet?
Well, they're pretty young yet. I got a daughter... a granddaughter that's 9 years old, first year in 4-H, so I think she's excited to be in 4-H, showing a steer and a pig this year. So, and then I think I got two grandsons, and then the rest are granddaughters. I have seven total. So,
I've seen plenty of girls exhibiting things here at the show, so it doesn't matter gender anymore, does it?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Like I say, they're all having fun out there. Two of them are not close to home, but the rest of them are very close to home.
How'd you get involved in, well, for lack of a better term, ag politics when you got involved with NPPC?
Well, I guess I've always carried the philosophy, if somebody don't speak up, somebody else will do it for you, and it'll be the wrong opinion. So I said, you got to participate in what you do and what you believe in. So I believe that you got to stand up and speak for what you believe in, and that's why I got involved.
When did you start that?
I started, of course, in our county. Probably it's been 20 years ago now, and then worked our way up through the county, up to the state, and then now onto the national.
So as a... Did you ever have visions of that this is the position you would be in as president?
Well, I don't know whether I ever had a vision being the National Pork Producers Council president, but I guess it's always been something you want to work your way up through, being in leadership or something. It's been a dream come true. I'd say in the last 5 or 6 years come to work our way up there, but when I started 20, 25 years ago, I can't say I ever dreamed of being this, but it's been exciting to be it now.
That first national meeting that you went to, what was that like?
Oh, it was tremendously exciting. It's just amazing what this association does, being a National Pork Producers Council. It's the in-depth things we do. I just didn't realize how much that they did and our staff does and how involved we are in making policy and making the direction of our industry.
The sharing of ideas, did you think that it would be as... vast of a thing, or did you kind of feel that, oh, well, we're not going to sway too much? What's that debate been like?
Oh, it's just amazing. Like I said before, I had no clue how in depth and how we have changed how we affect what goes on in the industry. Our staff is tremendous in what they do and how dedicated and involved they are. We are directing our industry and working hard, and I just want to play just a small part in that, I guess. I can't commend our staff enough. I don't mean to be repetition on it, but what we do and what we encounter every day has just been tremendous. And to be part of that and to know what's going on behind the back channels, I guess everybody should have an opportunity to take that chance. And I encourage everybody to be involved.
Any travel? Have you done a lot of
travel? Oh, a lot of travel. A lot of travel.
Where are some of the places you've
been? Oh, I just came back from Argentina here about 2 months ago. We spend a lot of time in D.C. We spend time in Des Moines. We don't do as much abroad travel as you might think or something. Our staff does a lot of that. But I've been to Colombia. I've been to other, I'm trying to think all the places. Can't recall them right now, I guess.
Is that just in 5 years or just this year?
Oh, no, that's just been in the last 2 years or something.
Wow.
Peru, I guess we came, been to there also or something. But there's a lot of travel, I guess. And I guess I have to go to Canada here in 2 weeks. I've been to Mexico. So, yes, there's travel involved.
How do you think your reception will be in Canada?
Well, we hope it'll be positive. We hope that there's no tariffs put on in Canada. I guess we usually have trilateral meetings, and that's kind of ceased here. When I call trilateral, that would be on Mexico and the Canada and U.S. get together every spring and fall, and they have ceased in the last year or so. It's probably been, of course, because of the NAFTA negotiations. We are going up there for a Canadian meeting in July. They've been good trading partners with us, and I hope it's not going to be too cold, I guess, to say, a relationship up there, but time will tell when we get there. But they've been good trading partners. I don't see any reason why they won't be. The pork and our two associations have been good friends.
And that's one thing that I would imagine is hard for some of the people that call you as members to make sure that you're keeping an eye on. And I was asking you this morning a little bit about, you know, what are you telling your members when they call, or what are you asking them to tell their representatives about trade and, say, keeping good relations with Canada or with Mexico?
Yeah, you know, it seems like lately we're getting a lot of calls lately there. What are you doing in trade? It seems like there's been a lot of tariffs put on. It started back in April with China coming on. Now we have Mexico tariffs put on us. Communications, of course, the biggest thing. We always have to communicate when somebody calls in, and it seems like that maybe we aren't running around with our hair on fire, or we aren't throwing rocks at the administration. I guess, you know, you don't want to say, well, the administration didn't put the tariffs on us. The other countries did, but that's not a good answer. Sometimes that's maybe some people take that the wrong way. We just got to make sure that they understand we are doing a lot of things on the back channels. We're working hard with the administration. We're hoping that they are working for us, because it doesn't do any good to throw rocks at them and say, you know, we can't accept this, because as soon as we do, they're going to throw us out to and not be on our side, or point them out and be the bad guys, because we need them to work for us just as hard, because they're the ones that's going to make things happen. So I hope you understand what I'm saying, because some people say, well, what are you doing? And the bottom line, we're hoping that they are working with their back channels to get things done. Because we don't want to be the ones that say, hey, you guys are out here complaining and nothing is happening.
And that's a constant, not just this year, but I mean, it always, some people wonder until they get involved with the board. They're like, what are you doing? Where are my dollars going to help them? But now this year, it's absolutely obvious that you're having to make a lot of phone calls and have conversations with people. Because as you're right, if you do throw rocks at the administration, they're your seat at the table for these negotiations.
That's a great point. You know, if they feel that all we're doing is complaining and we don't get heard, I mean, some people believe in the grease wheel gets heard fastest. This case is not true. We will be set to the side, because if we complain too much or make them the bad guy, we will not have a seat at that table. They will put us to the backside and say that we will not have a seat. Right now, we, for example, in April when we had our legislative action conference in Washington, we went and saw four undersecretaries in agriculture, trade, and in their cabinet position, and we saw all those people, and they all said, we give them a list of things we need to accomplish, and they're working very hard on that list. It's something I can't discuss in public right now, but we're seeing some results. Can you see them on paper? I think you'll see them soon. Will we lose a tariff? I can't say how soon it will be. I mean, we hope it'll be soon, and we can all say, yeah, we told you so, but it could be a long process. I guess we're in it for the long game, I guess, but one thing we are telling them, we can't bleed for very long. I guess the industry lost our, you know, we should have a very good rally here in the summer. We had the good rallies in pigs for the last 3 or 4 years. We might have missed some of that big rally this summer that we usually have. We're really wanting to protect our markets for this late last quarter this year and first quarter next year, because it looks very dismal right now. We're kind of concerned about that. But we need to get the NAFTA settled or the Mexican tariffs off. We don't need any more disruption there. China, it could be a long process. I hope we can get that lowered, our tariffs there. At least keep pork moving there at those tariffs if they're lowered somewhat, and get pork moving back into the end. All I can say is we're working very hard in the back channels, and I think those administration people that we have seen. We had two important people here today. Undersecretary Ibach was here today. We had a meeting before our SIP meeting today. USTR Secretary Greg Dowd will be here tomorrow. He was very influential in that. And I think they understand this. Their Secretary Perdue, USDA Secretary Perdue, we've had his ear. He's pushing pretty hard on our President Trump, and I think that he's hearing us. Now we just need to get some action, and that's what we keep pushing on, action.
All right, here's your opportunity, Jim, your soundbite to the president. What do you need to tell him about what's important for you and pork?
Well, we're patriots out here. You know, he asked us to be patriots, and agriculture has been a great patriot. We understand agriculture is one of the biggest to offset the deficit in the world economics, and we can only be patriots so long. We're at the blunt of the spear. The blunt of the spear is kind of getting bloody right now. We can't bleed very long. So he promises he'll help us. We need that help now. We can't bleed for very long. So please, we can only be patriots so long now. We're asking for that help to be repaid.
Let's take trade out of the mix. How healthy is the pork industry? I think you said this morning that you had expanded your own operation not that long ago, hoping for more exports. How many people have they been expanding at a good pace the last few years?
Well, the pork industry is very, very good. We're very low cost, economical, very productive industry. You know, that's why we have expanded. We have in the process of 5 new packing plants. 4 of them probably up and going already. Another one probably going online in January of 19. So I have 10% more production on the packing side. Our sow herds are increasing as far as prolifics and better production. We've had some good input costs. Have been good and moderate costs, so everybody kind of expanded. I mentioned on a news conference this morning that I expanded my herd just because I probably 3 years ago when we were sitting down and doing our goals with our family, we were looking for TPP and new trade agreements to be gone, and we were very positive about the market. So, you know, I don't want to paint a completely doom and gloom picture. We're still pretty optimistic at looking at new bilateral trade markets. And that's why the market expanded. That's why we were reaching our point of complete. Our shackle space and our packing houses were full. That's why packers expanded, because they knew that they were making good profits in the packing facility. And that's why they expanded. That's why hog people expanded, because they knew the packing houses, they knew trade was coming on. So the hog industry, as far as production, was in a good state with low inputs, cost efficiency, and good opportunities for trade at that time. And so we expanded.
We are chatting outside at the World Pork Expo, and the emphasis on the world. You've got a lot of foreign visitors here. What is important about having people from around the world come to see a close-up version, a vision of the pork industry?
Well, we're talking to the World Export. There's a lot of new technology here. There's a lot of things to see, just interact with our U.S. Allies, I guess, for the international visitors. Of course, the world's smaller than it ever has been today. It's when we say global is whether it's Canada, U.S., they're actually an extension of the U.S., so that's why it's difficult for us to understand why NAFTA is a problem. But everybody's trading. For example, my business right now, we're exporting pigs to China and to Mexico. So it's the world is getting smaller every day. So we need to trade with everybody. And I think it's nice to see the international visitors coming and see new products. There's a lot of international exhibitors here even themselves just to show some of their new products and the technology.
How much of the show do you actually get to walk to? I mean, you've got to do all these crazy media interviews and meetings yourselves.
I hope tomorrow I'll get around to see some things or something. So I'm planning on seeing some new things.
You said you've come to Iowa a little bit for meetings. Do you have to come every year, or does it rotate where you meet? You said you go to D.C. and other places. Where do you have to do these board meetings?
Our board meetings are throughout, but I still come to Iowa probably 4 times a year or something.
So compare, let's do a good comparison. Ohio, Iowa, you know, we're all 75% vowels, or however the statement goes. But in this Corn Belt region, I mean, what's similar and what's different about these states?
Oh, I think they're pretty similar in the fact. I mean, you probably have better corn ground than I do. We have more urbanization around our central Ohio, I will say that. We have a lot of, around Columbus, we have a lot of urbanization or something, but I see Iowa is really, Des Moines is really urbanizing just like Ohio, so I think we're pretty similar. We probably got a lot more pigs and a lot more corn than we do here in Ohio, so I envy that for you.
Well, and there's some, in some areas, though, that complain about whether it's the sight of a hog building or the smell of one of those. That's one of those constant things that the industry has to deal with. What's new in dealing with a couple of those main issues?
You know, I think that's I think that might be countrywide or something that it's hard to site new buildings every day. I think that's one thing, Noah, I would commend all hog producers. They do a very good job of trying to work with their neighbors, trying to be environmentally friendly. And a lot of the states, a lot of the national associations are working on doing a good job of helping them do a siting program to make sure we're doing a siting. We all have environmental kits. I think all the states, all the national associations, we have environmental kits to say, you know, doing the right thing. If we need help, we'll help you. And I commend all hog producers for doing a very good job of that. And we work hard on that. I think that's been, you don't see very, very, very few bad actors out there now. And I don't think that's been a problem. You still have the people down there that's going to make an issue before you hear the stories, before the first pig goes in the barn, the people complain about the smell, and there's never a pig in the barn. You're going to have people out there that do that, and it's sad that the unjust bad publications that we get. We have issues across the country of people that maybe some lawyers come in here looking for an opportunity to make money on an issue that's not even happening. So it's, I think you're going to have that, and I think that's new. The problem with the new social media issues and stuff like that. I don't know whether we can do it. I think that's just the new generation we live in.
Are you a Twitter guy?
I'm not a Twitter guy. I still like to birch the tweet.
Do you? All right. What about Facebook? Do you do that?
I do Facebook very little, though.
Is that mostly just for family, or do you ever use it for any of the official duties?
I need to use it more, but I'm in the baby boomer generation, so I need to do that. My kids tell me that, and I probably need to do a better job. So
your reign as president lasts for how much longer?
I'll be until next March.
Yeah, okay. So you've still got halfway to go.
Yes, I do.
Is that a one-year or a two-year
one-year
term?
Deal.
It's a one-year. So you're so this is kind of right in the middle
yes.
of everything. And
yes.
So what do you want to do here in the last few months of your presidency?
Well, if I'm a dreamer and I'm a goal setter, I want to have all the trade settled and all the tariffs off. So I might as well shoot big, right?
That's right. And if it comes through, you might be put on the Mount Rushmore of presidents.
I might be, but you know, I got to be realistic. If we can get this hog market turned around and make some positivity out of NAFTA, it would be super. But you know, reality has to set in sometime. We just want to work and make sure our producers understand what's going to be a good communication on what's happening. And, you know, we can only hope, as people keep telling me, our president is a good negotiator, and hopefully that we'll get negotiated some things. You know, we hear some positive things that maybe pork and some ag products will be negotiated positive in China. I mean, I'm giving an optimistic thing. I'm giving my opinion on that. I think all farmers live to be optimistic, and that's my optimistic view, I guess.
That's a good way to look at it, and really the only way you can look at it right now, because
yep.
you're trying to assist, and
yep.
as you said, not quite front lines, but I think you also said you're not just looking in a couple of those countries, you're looking at all sorts of countries. Is
yes.
it a supply or a demand issue that will help your industry, because you're trying to find, you're trying to make sure you meet demand, but you also are trying to help demand, but what if we don't expand? What if we shrink that supply? Would that be considered a good thing if you shrink some of that supply?
Well, you know, that's always a bad question to ask the farmer. Do you want to cut back? Do you want to cut back? I don't think any farmer likes to use the word to go backwards. And it's tough to cut back. It's tough to go backwards in the farming business. So we would rather create a supply than to give up to shorten up. We would rather create a demand
right.
than shorten up a supply, I should say. Nobody wants to shut down that farrowing barn or the gestation barn. No, likely a corn or soybean farmer wants to not plant a field and leave a sit idle. So I think we'd rather create demand instead of give up supply. So, and I think if we have an opportunity, like I say, we're a great, wholesome, safe product. And that's why I think we're being targeted, because we're one of the least cost most safest producers in the country, in the world, I should say. And that's why I think we're being targeted by other countries. They know that. And I believe in our president says he's going to help us. I guess, show us.
All right, before I let you go, Jim, last question. Best cut of pork to eat?
Well, some people will say bacon. I still like a great boneless pork loin grilled on the barbecue. I guess I can't beat that, but some people say bacon. I still like my pork loin.
Are you a dry rub or some type of sauce to help
I like a dry rub.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. Your own or something you've bought in the store?
I have my own concoction, but I probably stole it from somebody else.
But it still tastes good, and everybody wants you to make it?
Yep.
They say, Grandpa Jim, can you make some of those loins for us?
We still have it. Sometimes they wear it out at the end of summer, but we still have it every year. So I still enjoy it and look for it. I just got a new grill at home for my pre-Father's Day present, so it's a built-in grill. I got it, so I'm ready to go next week.
And you'll be using it once you get done spending your time in Iowa.
Thank you so much for
taking time to visit with us.
Have a good day.
The best way you can help us is share your favorite episode with a friend and tell them why you listen to this podcast. We'd really appreciate it. I'm Paul Yeager. Thanks for listening.